of all. Api.
Indeed.
Vastunam.
Entities.
Bhava artaha. The original unmanifested. Causal phase of material nature. Bhavati is. Sthitaha. Established. Tasha. Of that unmanifest nature. Api. Even. Bhagavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna. Lord Krishna. Kim. What? Atat. Separate from him. Vastu. Thing. Rupyatam. May be ascertained. So, translation. The original unmanifested form of material nature is the source of all material things, and the source of even that subtle material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. What then could one ascertain to be separate from him? So you can repeat. The original unmanifested form,
the original unmanifested form
of material nature
is the source of all material things.
And the source of even that subtle material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. What then could one ascertain to be separate from him? So there's no purport to this text. So we'll read the next text with its purport. The next text is actually a very famous text. Samashrutaye padapallavam palavapalam plavam mahatpadam punyayashomurare vambudirvasta patsa padam param padam param padam yadvipadam natesham. And the translation is, for those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon. The ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Parampadam Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. So purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This translation is taken from Srila Prabhupada's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, text 5. According to Srila Siddhara Swami, this verse summarizes the knowledge presented in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna's lotus feet are described as palava, flower buds, because they are most tender and of pinkish hue. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, the word palava also indicates that Lord Krishna's lotus feet are just like desire trees, which can fulfill all the desires of the Lord's pure devotees. Even exalted devotees like Sri Narada, who are themselves the great shelter for the conditioned souls in this universe, personally take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. Thus, it is natural that when Lord Krishna manifested himself as all the young boys and calves of Vrindavan, their parents were more attracted to them than previously. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure and, being all attractive, the ultimate object of everyone's love. So, Omagana Timadandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shigurveyanaha. So, there's several people here who don't know the whole story behind this particular text and behind the statement about the young boys and calves of Vrindavan and how their parents became more attracted to them. when Krishna took their form, so I'll explain that story very, very quickly. Once upon a time, Krishna actually appeared as these young boys and calves because the young boys and calves, they had been stolen by someone named Lord Brahma. And so when Krishna appeared as them and took their form, their parents were more attracted to their children than they were previously, because their children at that particular point were Krishna. That's that in a nutshell. So, as far as this verse is concerned, this is actually a metaphor. When we're talking about Krishna's lotus feet being a boat, it's not that literally the devotees like jump into a boat and there's a Krishna's feet. But it means that the devotees of Krishna take shelter of Krishna's feet. Now, what does that mean? Because oftentimes in the Vedic culture, and in many traditional cultures, you'll find an emphasis on feet. Even in Christianity, you have Lord Jesus Christ washing the feet of his followers. And, you know, why is all this feet stuff going on? I hear lotus feet, I worship your feet, I take shelter of your feet. And it's not exactly a foot fetish, you know, where people are just like concentrating on feet. First of all, when you approach someone in this way, let's say washing their feet or touching their feet, it indicates humility. As said in the Bible, is it difficult for a rich man to go to heaven? As for a camel to pass through an eye of a needle. So, one has to actually become humble to enter into the kingdom of God. And of course, that's mentioned by Lord Chaitanya in his Shikshastika, that one has to be Trinadapis, Nichina, Taro, Yudhisthira, Manina, Manadena, Kirtani, Asadhari. One has to be more tolerant than a tree devoid of all sense of false prestige and ready to offer all respects to others, more tolerant than a tree. So a tree is quite tolerant because people carve their initials in trees all the time, so-and-so and so-and-so, and the tree never complains about the whole thing. So that's one point about feet, that it indicates one's humility. Another thing is the approaching someone through their feet indicates an attitude of service. That one naturally has the attitude of serving. Another thing about the lotus feet of Krishna is that the devotees, or the great pure devotees, have taken shelter at Krishna's feet. And because they have taken shelter at Krishna's feet, they, in one sense, in a metaphorical sense, but actual sense, they reside at Krishna's feet. So when we approach Krishna through his feet, then we're actually approaching all these great devotees who are residing at Krishna's feet. And by approaching great personalities, one can understand the nature of the Absolute. And secondly, one can get the mercy of the Absolute. Because it's described that Krishna gives his mercy out to those who love him. And in this world, very few of us completely love Krishna. Of course, the love that Krishna is controlled by, as that Krishna is attracted by, is what we call unalloyed love. Unalloyed love means no other focus of one's love other than pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's very hard to come by. As Krishna says in the Gita, one should offer him leaf, fruit, water, vegetarian food, of course, with love and devotion. So love and devotion is a very high standard. It's not simply a type of infatuation that one has in this world. Like, you know, we love many things. You know, I could say I love my car, or I love my mobile phone. But that's not really love. that means that I'm using my car, I'm using my mobile phone for my own satisfaction. But real love means to satisfy or simply be absorbed in satisfying the object of one's love. And that's how Krishna is controlled, and that's why Krishna accepts foodstuffs offered by his devotees. So therefore, we approach Krishna through his devotees, and the devotees are actually offering to Krishna, and we are offering to Krishna's devotees. It's like we have this process of worship on the altar, and on the altar you have the pictures of Krishna's great devotees, what it's called in the cyclic succession, and we offer first the implements, such as incense, and flour, and the little handkerchief, and the water, and the conch, and everything like that, through Krishna's devotees. So that's what it means by lotus feet approaching Krishna, Krishna's lotus feet to approach Krishna through his devotees. And a humble service attitude. This is extremely important. So, and then in this particular verse, it's described that Krishna is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon. That's a very interesting story that's told in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the story, I'll tell very quickly, of Krishna killing this demon called Bhomasura. Now, the Bhomasura demon is quite interesting because the Bhomasura demon is actually the son of Krishna. And Krishna has various incarnations. And talking about Krishna's lotus feet and Krishna's body, which is completely transcendental, Satchidananda Vigraha, Krishna is able to do anything with any part of his body. There's a verse in the Brahma Samhita that states, Angani Yasha Shakalansh Driyadriyati Manti, that Krishna can do anything. He can eat with his eyes, he can see with his toes, he can taste with his hands, or anything with any part of his body. And the reason for that is his body is composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. We are limited because our body is simply a machine. And machines have specific parts meant for certain things. Like the tongue is meant to taste, also meant for talking. The hands are meant for grasping. You cannot grasp something with your nose. I mean, maybe if it's big enough. But you know, it'd be kind of hard to do that. You can't grasp something, and you can't eat. Like Prabhupada would often give the example that we feed the body by putting the food in the mouth. You can't put the food in the palm of the hand and just keep squeezing the palm of the hand to be able to digest the food. Because the body is a machine. Machines have specific parts, just like a car. Of course, the verse in the Bhagavad Gita that describes the body as being a machine, the 18th chapter, Yancha Rudani Maya, it's a machine that works on the agency of the material elements. And so, like a car, you can't take the steering wheel and run the car on. The steering wheel has to be run on the tires. But when you have something that's completely transcendental, Krishna's transcendental body, which is not different from Krishna, Krishna can do anything with his body. Anything, or he can look any way he wants to, which is amazing. So Krishna has these various incarnations, or what's called avatars, means descending personalities from the spiritual world, which are all non-different than him. Advaita, Chuta, Anadi, Vananta, Rupa, Madhyam, Purana, Purusham, Navayovanam, Cha. And he looks in all sorts of different ways. Sometimes Krishna appears as a hat man, hat lion. Sometimes he appears as a boar. A boar doesn't mean a boring person. It means a wild pig. Sometimes he appears as Hoyagriva, a person with a horse head. Sometimes he appears as a fish.
Sometimes he appears in different human type of incarnations or appearances. So, anyway, so in this particular incarnation we can make reference to, Krishna appeared as a boar. That means a wild pig. And as a wild pig, he touched the earth planet. I can tell the whole story about the boar incarnation. He touched the earth planet, and as I mentioned before, because all the senses are interchangeable, because he touched the earth planet, and the earth, the personification of the earth planet, because the earth is actually a person, and the earth gave birth to a little baby. And that baby was known as Boma. And Boma was a nice guy, but because of bad association, he became a bad guy. Actually, the Gita talks about this too, that one's situation in this world is due to association. Whoever you associate with, you become like that person, or persons. And that's due to the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, which are all pervasive in this world. And each person carries a combination of these three modes of nature. Each situation carries a combination of these three modes of nature. And each time of day has a particular combination of the three modes of nature. And each place you go has a combination of these three modes of nature. Like you go to the forest, that's in the mode of goodness. That's why yogis, they would go to the forest to meditate. Generally, they would not go to the city to meditate. They would go to the forest. And certainly, they would not go to a bar to meditate. Because that's in the mode of ignorance. You know, goodness, passion, ignorance are the three modes. So they wouldn't go to a bar. You know, don't see many yogis chanting Om in the middle of a bar. At least I haven't seen. Maybe they haven't. That would be a pretty transcendental yogi. So, anyway, so this particular person, Boma, he had some bad association. You know, he joined the wrong university or something like that. And because of that, he became really bad and he started kidnapping girls. These girls were princesses, not just ordinary run-of-the-mill girls. So he started kidnapping them, and he ended up, after a while, you know, 16,100 of them. It's quite a bit. That's a big kidnapper. So he kidnapped 16,100 girls, and Krishna wanted to rescue them, but also Krishna... He wanted to do other things too, like this Boma had also stolen someone's earrings. Actually, one of the high, what we call demigods in the universe, Aditi's earrings. He had also stolen an umbrella from one of the demigods. And so he was a really bad guy. So Krishna took his wife to attack this demon who happened to be his son. In another incarnation. So he was called Boma Asura. The Asura means someone who is not good. Sura means good, Asura means not good. So he took his wife, and they were flying on the back of a big bird. It's like that movie Avatar. Anyone seen Avatar? You've seen Avatar? Anyone seen Avatar? No. So he was flying on the back of a big bird called Garuda. Anyway, interesting. So he's flying on the back of a big bird, Garuda, and he went to attack this person who happened to be his son who had turned to the dark side. And he had to encounter many different barriers to this Boma's, called Bomasura's city. There was a electric fence. This is true. This is from the Krishna book. There's an electric fence. There was a gaseous substance, a poisonous gas called Nila. And there was a moat. And finally, there was a guard called Mura.
And that's why Krishna is called Murari, the enemy of the Murari demon. And this Mura had five heads. And Krishna, to make a long story short, Krishna used one of his weapons, which is called the Sudarshan Disc, and he chopped off the heads of this particular individual, this Mura demon. And then when he went on, eventually and rescued these princesses. 16,100 princesses. And the interesting thing, what he did with them was quite interesting. He got married to them. So some people say, I mean, that's really the perfection of polygamy, where you can marry 16,100 princesses at once. And Krishna's God, so he can do any of this stuff. He's unlimited. He's called Aptakama. Aptakama means whatever he wants happens automatically. He gets his desire without asking anyone, without doing anything. And so this is the story of the Mura demon. Then getting on with this particular verse, it says, the ocean of the material world becomes shrunk up like the water contained in a calf's footprint. So the material world is also, or often called, the ocean of material suffering and material existence. And in this material ocean, as described in this verse, there's danger at every step. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. What that means is not only the physical danger that one encounters in this world, just like right now people are talking about this virus, the coronavirus, and everyone's getting nervous about it. The stock market is taking a nosedive. I think it had its biggest drop ever yesterday. Is that right? So everyone's getting nervous. Oh my God, what's going to happen? All of a sudden, we were riding high. The stock market was reaching new highs, and all of a sudden, oh my God, we have to wear masks all the time. So this is the nature of the material world. You never know what's going to happen. Never know what's going to happen. You can be in an airplane, the airplane can crash. You can be in the car can crash. Or you can be in a material body, and the body can get old and crash eventually. So that's one type of danger that's there in this world. And another type is, of course, it's destined. You're destined to crash. So whatever. So you could say that it's going to happen anyway, so might as well just like go with the flow, and when I'm going to crash, I'm going to crash. But another type of danger is if you crash in the wrong way, as Krishna says in the 8th chapter of the Gita, that yam yam vapi smaran bhavam yajate anti kalevam tantam nivaiti kunti asada tatvapa bhavata. If you crash in the wrong way, you're headed for a worse situation than the next birth. So you got to crash anyway. This body, somehow or other, is going to crash. And it's not that I'm a great astrologer, but there's no one who's in the history of the world who's had a material body who hasn't crashed. I mean, left the body eventually. And whatever you're thinking of, whatever your consciousness is like when you crash, it's interesting, there was a movie once about a guy who crashed and he was thinking of his dog, and in the movie he actually became a dog. And it's like, I don't remember what the movie's name was. But anyway, whatever you're thinking of when you crash, that's where you go in your next life. So that's really the greatest danger. Often described as the greatest danger is losing the opportunity to be a human being. Because the human being is meant for something different than animals are meant for. Animals are meant for eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and human beings, they can do it too, but that's not really what they're meant for. They're meant for self-realization. You know, atato brahma jigyasa. Now is the time to look for the absolute truth. Because we have certain faculties that animals don't have. Like we can ask the question about what is life all about? Where did we come from before we were born? Where are we going when we die? What is God like?
what is the purpose of the material world? Animals generally don't ask those questions. So if one doesn't use the human being or the human body that one has been given for the proper purposes, then, as they say, use it or lose it. Then you just lose it. And next life you'll wake up as a puppy dog. Or as a cockroach. Any of those interesting creatures. Or as a tree. Actually, probably one time was in visiting or preaching or speaking to people in a nudist colony. And Prabhupada said, well, they're walking around naked, you know, so this is the next life they're going to be trees. You know, trees don't have any clothes. I guess they wear bark. But, you know, but so Prabhupada made that statement. So you can be a tree, you can be a plant, you can be a cockroach, you can be a bird, or a monkey. And so that's a great danger. So if one takes up spiritual life, one can avoid that particular danger. That's the danger of the material world. That's what it means by danger at every step. And it's described here that one is able to cross over the ocean in a very easy way. In fact, the acharyas describe in their purports to this particular verse that when a devotee, one who executes bhakti yoga, crosses over the ocean of material existence, this particular person, the bhakti yogi, doesn't even notice he's crossed over it. It was really interesting. In other words, it's just so automatic. I'm not even using the word automatic. It's just so spontaneous. I mean, you don't notice. Just like when you become attracted to something in this material world, you don't notice that you've lost attraction for everything else. Let's say something, you like something, whatever you like in this world. Let's say I was mentioning before about a Tesla. So, you know, I look at a Tesla and forget about all the other cars. Hopefully we can find someone to finance me. But anyway. It's similar, or, you know, when one so-called falls in love in this world, they don't notice anything, even that there's a lamppost in front of them that they happen to run into. So when one actually becomes perfect in bhakti yoga, you don't even notice that you've actually transcended this world. It's just like you're in the spiritual realm. It's so easy. That's why, and we were talking about this before, that's why the bhakti yoga process is the quickest and easiest and topmost process. Previously this morning we were talking about the other processes of yoga, such as the Hatha yoga process. Hatha yoga is yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, ashtanga yoga. Takes a long time. Imagine, you know, first of all, you have to give up things, and then you have to go to a secluded place, you know, the jungle or the forest. That's how Hatha Yoga is performed. And then you have to learn how to do all these asanas, control your mind, breathe in a certain way, pull back the senses and pull back your consciousness from the external world, fix it, dharana, dhyana, and then finally you're in samadhi. And so Bahunam Janmana Ante, Ganavamam Prapajate, Vasudeva Sarvaviti, Sarvahatma Sagurulas. Krishna says, after many, many births of doing this and also the other yoga process called Sankhya Yoga or Jnana Yoga, then one comes to the point of transcending. It takes a long time. A long time and a lot of endeavor and a lot of austerity. One has to control their eating, control their sleeping, so many things. And this is the sixth chapter of the Gita deals with this. So with bhakti yoga, it's automatic attraction. It's really easy. You just get, wow.
Krishna is great, the spiritual world is great, let's go for it. And that's it. Okay, no more asanas. Thank God. No more pranayama. Thank God. I can eat as much as I want, prasad, you know. So it's actually much easier. And of course, bhakti yoga is composed of different steps, but all the steps give you many benefits. The first benefit, of course, one gets is immediate relief from all the stress. That's the first thing, the first thing you get from bhakti yoga. Even in the beginning stage, even in the practice stage, you get immediate relief from all the stress. Beginning of all auspiciousness. I mean, there's different things you get. Ultimately, you come to the point of being able to attract Krishna. Krishna, who is so powerful, he's God. He's the strongest, he's the most attractive, he's the most famous, he's the most intelligent, etc. You have the ability to even attract him by your love. It's the power of love. First, we become attracted to Krishna because he's the most attractive. All attractive things come from Krishna. That's why we're attracted to things in this world. We're attracted to a sunset, we're attracted to a Tesla, you know. And that comes from Krishna. Krishna, the beauty of a Tesla comes from Krishna. It's funny. Anyway, never thought of it that way before. It comes from Krishna. And Krishna is ultimately, infinitely much more attractive than that. So, in other words, by practicing this yoga system, bhakti yoga, it's called devotional service and practice, which means the chanting and the offering of the food to Krishna, then one becomes attracted and hearing about Krishna, that's the most important thing, hearing about Krishna, his different qualities, his unlimited opulences, his unlimited power. One becomes attracted to him, and then you just become falling in love with him. And not only do you love him, but you love everybody, because everybody is connected to him. So that's the method to achieving universal love. And then, when you achieve that stage, he becomes attracted to you. It's nice, isn't it? So that's a loving relationship that expands unlimitedly, which satisfies the self, savaipum sam paradharma, yato bhakti rahotsache, ahoitukiya pratyata, yatra supersivati. This is the only thing that satisfies the self. And we're always looking for that type of loving relationship. But as stated in this great song, you can't get no satisfaction any other way. Remember the song? Can't get no satisfaction. Anyway. So, anyway, that's the way to be satisfied, and that's it. I think we have to end now because it's time to greet the deities. All glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Jai. Oops.